We're on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, and the last thing that we discussed, you'll remember, is that there is a machlokes here as to whether or not Moshe Rabbeinu at the snare, his response was laudatory, or on the contrary, he deserved punishment for it. Moshe Rabbeinu hides his face, Vayaster Moshe Panov, Ki Yarei Mehabit Elokim. And one approach, which is the approach of Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Moshe Rabbeinu asks Hashem, Hareini Noas Kvodech, Hashem says, look, when I wanted to, you didn't want to. Now you want to and I don't want to. So it seems like a harsh response. That's Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha. On the other hand, Rabbi Yonasan says, on the contrary, Moshe Rabbeinu was rewarded for the fact that Vayaster Moshe Ponov. So that's the last thing that we did. But what we didn't get a chance to do, I don't think, tell me if I'm wrong, is to look in the Ein Ayah. And that would be on page 32. And that would be number Ayin Hey, which is the last paragraph on page 32. Nira de Pligi. What is the Yisod HaMachlokes between Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha and Rabbi Yonasan? What are they arguing about? You know, did Moshe do the right thing? Did he not do the right thing? He says the argument is about the hub or the pinnacle of Shlemus. What is the greatest achievement that man can hope for, can strive for? And there are two roads here, the two directions that you could take. One is the road of Seichel, that man's greatest endowment is intellect. And that's what the Rambam presents in the third chelik of Mor Nevuchim. Man has to have an intellectual curiosity and strive for intellectual perfection. That's the greatness of man. However, Rabbeinu Bechai, in his famous work, the Chovos HaLevavos, has a different approach. What's the apex? What's the pinnacle of man? And that is Yedias Elokus. He says Musar HaAvoda. Now Musar HaAvoda means that although man has to strive to know God, but the intellectual achievement of knowing is not the greatest level of man, the pinnacle. You know, which man should be put up on high, on the top of Mount Everest? The Rambam would put up the intellect. Everything about the Rambam is always knowledge. You know, that's man's endowment. The more the knowledge, the greater the man. There's one point in which, by the way, the Rambam implies that if Aristotle had studied Torah, he would have been a Novi. You know, he would have been that's the intellect of Aristotle. However, the Chovos HaLevavos says that the emphasis should be shifted from the intellect to what he calls Musar V'Avoda, meaning man's behavior patterns, his midos, his attributes, his modes of behavior, his ethics. Now, let's go back to Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha. Moshe Rabbeinu had a shot at knowing God back at the snare. Hashem was willing to reveal himself. And Moshe backs off. Says Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha, Moshe deserves a punishment for that. Why? Because from the perspective of intellectual curiosity, man should have an insatiable desire. A curiosity that knows no bounds. Don't start making calculations. Moshe Rabbeinu, you've got the opportunity. Hashem is revealing himself. Grab onto it. This could project you light years forward in your achievements in the intellect. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu did the wrong thing by turning away. He gave up on a wonderful opportunity. How could he do so? The curiosity of the intellect is insatiable. However, Rabbi Yonasan has a different approach. His approach was that the ultimate goal of all knowledge is nothing more than a means to an end. It's not an end unto itself. The greatest man is not the man of knowledge, but the man of hanaga musarit, of living an ethical life, man's behavior is going to determine where his notch is, you know, on the high, on the hierarchy of man. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu had to make the following decision. There's a seesaw over here. On the one hand, from a perspective of intellectual achievement of knowledge, he should latch on to this opportunity. Take advantage of the opportunity to see, to behold God in His countenance. But on the other hand, from the perspective of Hanagah Musarit, the way that man should behave, the ethical and moral greatness of man, do you have the audacity to look at God? And Moshe Rabbeinu retreats. He withdraws out of a sense of humility. Who am I to perceive God? And therefore, Rav Yonason says, what does it say again? Vayaster Moshe Panov, he was granted the klaster, Zocha leklaster, the klaster Panov. A beautiful, profound, I think, insight. Very short and abridged, but there's so much here. And there's really a fundamental machlokus about, you know, what is the greatness of man, the greatest achievement of man. Now, before we go on, I want to backtrack a little to Rabbi Meir. You may recall that we discussed the great length. Did Moshe Rabbeinu get an affirmative response to his request to understand the ways of God, the Tzadik V'Ralo, Rosh V'Tovlo, etc., etc.? And one opinion was that yes, Hashem responded in the affirmative. He gave him an insight into how it works. There's a Tzadik Gomor, there's a Tzadik Sheino Gomor, there's a Rosh Gomor, Rosh Sheino Gomor, etc., the whole discussion that we had about that. And then Rabbi Meir came along, and Rabbi Meir argues. And he says, no, Hashem responded to Moshe's request for Shechina, for Klal Yisrael, to the exclusion of the other nations. But when Moshe Rabbeinu asks, "Hareini nos kvodech," I want to understand the secrets of your hanhaga, Hashem said, no. How does Rabbeinu know this? Because of the pasuk of V'chanosi es asher achon. There's something beyond human comprehension about the way God gives out His divine grace. And we discussed, if you remember, that Otzer, you know, there was a medrash that says that there's a treasury up on high where Hashem stores the gifts that He wants to give gratis. And that's already a secret beyond human comprehension. And maybe we'll have a chance to come back to that again. But the Ein Ayah has a slightly different approach. What is this, according to Rabbeinu, what is this last secret piece of the puzzle that man, that's incomprehensible to man? And he says the following. Man has freedom of choice. And within that context, we understand the justice of man. This is number Ayin Dalet on page 32. The justice of God is that if man utilizes his freedom of choice properly, he will be duly rewarded. However, man is surrounded by a myriad of experiences and situations where, you know what? Man doesn't have freedom of choice. And we discuss this at great length, that man is also a natural being who's subject to the vicissitudes of nature. And sometimes nature presents a very dangerous situation that's compelling and doesn't allow man to take full advantage of his freedom of choice. And therefore, when we look at man and we behold Maisim Rayim, we think that man is doing evil and therefore he should be punished because man is endowed with freedom of choice. The answer is, we become absolutely confused. We say, how could it be that this person who misused his freedom of choice and did evil, how could there be within the context of Mishpat, of divine justice, a possibility of his living the good life? But the answer is that man doesn't always understand, man doesn't always have the capability of properly judging the actions of man. And he assumes that Ploni Almoni, this person, is certainly exercising full Bechira Chafshis, a full freedom of choice. And therefore he should be punished for his actions. But it's impossible to really appreciate divine justice in the full sense, because man can never really define human action properly. V'chanosi es asher ochan. Afal pi she'eno hagun. Eno hagun means when we judge man's actions, we come to the absolute conclusion with great certainty that man has abused his freedom of choice and he's guilty of a deliberate criminal act. Aval ein anu yodin, but in truth we don't know. Man hasn't the capacity to know gvul habechira. What is the boundaries, the limitations of freedom of choice? And Rabbi Meir holds that man's freedom of choice is not absolute. There are certain things that are beyond freedom of choice. So even though man is given the ability to come to freedom of choice, but sometimes his actions are a result of causes that are outside of man's freedom. And therefore we make mistakes when we think that man is guilty as accused, because perhaps there are situations that are beyond his control. Yesh hechrechim shehem gluyim rak lifnei yotzer ha'olam, yotzer breishis yisbarach. There are certain hechrechim, which means situations that are thrust upon man, that incarcerate man and don't allow man freedom, and they can only be perceived, they're only revealed in front of the Creator. And therefore, that changes the entire picture and the scale of schar v'onesh. So let's not judge reward and punishment, Moshe Rabbeinu. There are certain things I can't reveal to you, says God. They're beyond human ability to understand, because man is not endowed with full-fledged freedom of choice. And I think that the machlokas here in the Gemara, according to this approach, is a very fundamental one. Again, to what extent does man have freedom of choice? And therefore, to what extent do we have the ability to judge man, to evaluate his actions, to come to the conclusion that man is indeed evil and he's guilty as accused? And the truth be told, that when I think of the limitations, according to this presentation of Meir, of freedom of choice, I think about all sorts of situations in material, physical world that are beyond our control. You know, man is physically limited. Ask a scrawny guy, you know, who's 5'6" and weighs 110 pounds to pick up a tremendous load. Yeah, that's not within his freedom of choice. He doesn't have the physical ability to do so. Ask a man who's bedridden, Rahmanul Itzlan, because of a very serious disease, to feel the same level of joy and active participation in the world that another man is ridiculous. Ask a poor person to contribute for a great cause and support Torah institutions. He can't do so. He wishes he could. But those are situations beyond his control. But you know what? I think that maybe we could go a step further. Maybe even in the realm of man's actions, as they are judged in front of the courts, maybe there's a limit to man's freedom of choice. I don't know. In France, for example, they have this concept, I don't know if you're familiar with, called a crime of passion. And I'm not saying that the Torah would subscribe to that, but within the realm of ethical theory, there is a limitation, there's a bounds that we cannot expect man to go beyond those bounds. Situations which put a man in such an emotional state of passion, in which he just simply responds like a knee-jerk response. You know, like if I hit you in the knee, you know, on the bottom side of the leg, and your leg just shoots out, that's a knee-jerk response. You know, that's not something that you can control. I don't know, maybe even in the ethical realm, there are bounds. There's a whole machlokas in the Gemara in Makkos about the case of Omer Mutter. Someone says, you know what, I was never taught that this is prohibited. And in my mind, it's permissible. You know, everything's innocent until proven guilty. Until you tell me that it's prohibited, I assume it's permissible. And he goes ahead and does things that you and I would say intuitively, rationally, you should realize they're wrong. And yet there's one opinion in the Gemara that Omer Mutter is a shogeg. You know, he cannot be held responsible for a deliberate act, even though he was intentional, because he was unaware of the law. These are just examples where even the halacha in its judgment of a person, and whether he's guilty or not, introduces elements of, you know, that absolve a person or alleviate his responsibility, even though you and I would say he's absolutely responsible. So the realm of ethics and how to judge man, I think, is surely, in Rav Meir's frame of reference, and I have an intuition towards Rav Meir, beyond human comprehension. So we take a look at this guy and we say, well, Tzadik Veralo, we have a question. This guy, it's Rosh Vitovlo, we have a question, but we're quick to judge a person. And maybe we shouldn't be so quick to judge people. Okay. One last point that I wanted to add to our discussion of Yom Sheni of 2 days ago is something I found here in the Yalkut Biurim in the name of the Ein Yaakov. The Ein Yaakov is, of course, a super commentary. And he quotes that Medrash that we looked at yesterday, that when Moshe Rabbeinu heard V'chanosi es Asher Achon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him that there's an otzar, there's some sort of a treasure for someone who really doesn't deserve divine grace, but there's something called gratis. And he adds the following comment. This is the Ein Yaakov. He says, Yedias Yoshar Maisei Bnei Adam Vitzikosom Zeme Advarim Anistorim Biyoser. Similar approach to what we just saw in the Ein Ayat, that we are quick to judge man, but can we really know whether man is righteous or he's not? These are Advarim Nistorim. These are very concealed dimensions. That they should call Adam lefi tivo umizgo kach godel chiyuvo. You have to understand the mezeg of a person, in other words, his psychological makeup, in order to really appreciate what he should be chayev and when he's not chayev. V'yesh, and there are situations and individuals she'ein biyicholto lefi tivo, that based on what he's capable of, he doesn't have the ability lifol harbi to do more than you think he can. El choshek umisave lasos meisim tovim rabim. But even though he's prevented from doing so, he harbors within his heart a tremendous craving, an infinite desire to do these meisim tovim, but he's prevented from doing so. There are factors that aren't in his control, and they prevent him. He cannot implement, despite his great desire to do so, these ma'asim tovim. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu yodea machshavos tovos. Man doesn't understand, but God knows. He's a bochen klois v'lev. He knows what man desires to do, and therefore God digs into this otzer and he pulls out matnas chinam. It's only a matnas chinam from the perspective of the onlooker, because Ploni Almoni didn't actually implement these actions. But Hashem knows his tshukas alev, the desire of his heart. And this, I think, is reflected in the Chazal that say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzarif machshava maisa, machshava tova lemaisa. Now he quotes the Ramchal. You know, the Ramchal wrote many works, the most famous of which is the Mesilas Yesharim. But he also wrote a sefer called the Das Tfunos. And it's a little bit difficult to understand the Das Tfunos. But he says in one line that Yesh Adam she'agia mitzad shorish inyono lios mushpa beribui hashpa. Okay, this is a very difficult piece. You know what, maybe we'll put it on the side. I'm going to do more research on it. Last time, I think I cracked the nut, but I'm not sure. So in honor of Zev, we'll start a new piece of Gemara, and we'll put the Ramchal on the side for the time being. But believe me, there again, remind me if you can. I want to come back to it. All right. So we're on Daf Zayin Omid Aleph, and we're going to count up four lines up from the bottom of the Daf. And the Gemara tells us the following: Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Yosi. Kol dibur v'dibur sheyotza mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'tova afilu al tnai lo chazar bo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives avtocha, he promises something good, but he makes a condition. The promise was given within a certain context. And guess what? That condition was never fulfilled. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the promise. And God will not rescind that promise. Where do we... Yeah.
It's like Purim.
Like Purim?
Yes. My Chashan Rosh says, Kol asher midat en la'ashiv.
Oh, I see.
And that's what he said to...
The Ksav HaMelech, in other words.
Right.
Melech is always an allusion to God.
And even when we read the Megillah, we see that... Achashverosh did not go back from his decree to allow to kill the Jews. All he gave them was, you can protect yourself.
Right. But he's going even a step further, because he's saying, even though there was a Tanakh, you know, Achashverosh says, I can't rescind, I can't recall the documents, you know, the decrees, they're signed and sealed, the Tabasama. So what's the case? Minola, what's the source for this? You remember this? Very famous Gemara. Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenemar, Hashem says to Moshe, implying that Moshe should respond, this is after the eagle, with tefillah, with bakasha, Heref mimeni v'ashmidem. I'm going to destroy them from underneath the Shamayim, but that's not the part that we're interested in, we're in the next part. V'aseh oscha l'goy atzum. I'm going to make you into a great nation. Meaning, let's start this whole experiment from the beginning. Leave Klal Yisrael out of the picture. They failed miserably at the Egel. Now we're going to start a whole new Klal Yisrael with Moshe Rabbeinu. And I'm going to make you into a Goy Atzur. But then Moshe Rabbeinu stood up, because he got the hint, and he prayed on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and the power of his prayer was so great that he was able to stave off the punishment, the decree to destroy Klal Yisrael. But Afal Gav de Boy Moshe Rachmeole de Milsa Ubatle, even though Moshe asked for divine compassion and successfully caused the bittul, in other words, God rescinded his decree to destroy the Jewish people. Nevertheless, Afilu Hochi, Okma Bizarre, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to guarantee that Moshe Rabbeinu will be the Alta Zeda, the ancestor of multitudes of Jews. He will have descendants that number Goy Atzum V'Rav. How do we know this? So for this, you have to know Tanakh, but all the way till the end. You know, even, you know, if you learn Sefer Yoshua, okay, we got by Sefer Yoshua. Some people got by Shmuel, Malachim, but, you know, we're talking about Divrei HaYamim. So Vashtet Divrei HaYamim, Shenemar, B'nei Moshe, Gershom V'Eliezer. Okay, Moshe had two sons. That's no big deal. But Vayu v'nei Eliezer, who are the children of Eliezer? Rechavya harosh, uvnei Rechavya rabu lemala. So the one of the children of Eliezer was called Rechavya, like this neighborhood over here that's not far from us, or like the Be'er, you remember that Yitzhak dug, it's called Rechavot, and there's a city here called Rechavot. And who was the original Rechavya? He didn't live on Usishkin Street or Rechav Haran. The original Rechavya back in the day was the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. And more important is that the Tanakh testifies that Rechavya Rabu Milmala. And what does that mean? Rabu Milmala, he had multitudes of Zera, of descendants. Vitani Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef teaches us, how much is Rabu Lamala? Lamala Mishishim Ribu. That means more than the number of the Jewish people that went out of Mitzrayim. And how does he know such a thing? Asiyo Yezek Zereshov. Revia, Ksiv Hacha, with regard to the Tzetzaim of Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, Ravu Lemala, Uksiv Hasam, Ubnei Yisrael, Paru, Vayishritzu, Vayirbu. Take a look at the word Paru in the context, the beginning of Sefer Shmos, of the Yerev Chazal say Shisha Ribu, because they multiplied at such a fast rate. And that's what encourages the fear of the Mitzrayim. But be that as it may, from this Gzeirah Shava of Revia, it says Ravu, and here it says Vayirbu, we learn that from Moshe Rabbeinu comes Shishim. Just 1 second. I think that I skipped a line of Gemara, and I apologize. Yeah. I skipped a very, very esoteric Gemara. I mean, all the Gemaras we're learning are somewhat esoteric, but this one tops it all. So let's go back to the Gemara here. Now, 5 lines up from the bottom of the Gemara. So we covered the last 4 lines on the page. Now we want to go back to the line before that, which I inadvertently skip, and I hope you don't mind. But you know, with these agaditas, the seder is not absolutely critical. Okay. Now you remember that Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hareini na es kvodech. And he wants to get a picture, so to speak, of a perspective to behold the countenance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So guess what God says to him? He says, Vasirosi es kapi viraisa es achorai. Very strange. Omar Avchana bar Bizna, very famous Gemara. Omar Rav Shimon Chasida. Melame Chehera Kodesh Baruch Hu LeMoshe Keshesholt. Wow. Now this is all based on a previous Gemara that we learned that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Tefillin. And in the back of Hashem's Tefillin Shel Rosh is a Kesher. And that's the Kesher that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows, he reveals to Moshe Rabbeinu.
The question was,
it
a Dalit?
Right, or well, like a double Dalit, right. What did it look like? So first of all, I want to quote the Rashba. You know, the Rashba has a Pirish on Agadita, and he very often quotes the Gaonim. And the Gaonim say that what really HaKadosh Baruch was doing here was and this is similar to what you were saying, Zev, he was really showing him what the Kesher Shel Tefillin looks like. You know, there were many Kalim, for example, in the Beis HaMikdash, where Moshe couldn't figure out how to make them. Hashem had to show Moshe, you know, what do we call it? Show and tell. You remember that phrase? I don't know if you... Show and tell. It was an example for Moshe Rabbi. But then he says something else that caught my attention. And he says the following. He says, the Gemara says that Kesher Shel Tefillin, this is the Gemara Menachos, is halacha l'Moshe miSinai. Now, I don't know if that supports the opinion of the Gaonim or contradicts the opinion of the Gaonim. But one thing is clear. It does state that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who taught us the Kesher Shel Tefillin. But how did Moshe Rabbeinu himself know the Kesher Shel Tefillin? The answer is this Gemara. So that's one way of approaching this Gemara and leaving out all philosophical thinking. You know, this is just a halachic discussion over here. But it goes way beyond that. The Gemara says on Daf Vav that what's written in the Parshios of Tefillin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we write in our Parshios the Shevach, the praise of Hashem. So what's in the Parshios of God's Tefillin? And the Gemara answers, Shvachan Shal Yisrael. It's the praise of Israel. You remember all the psukim there, Mikamcha Yisrael, Goyechet Baretz, etc., etc. So when Rav Shimon Chasida says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu the Kesher Shel Tefillin, it means, listen to the language that I'm quoting here, the name of the Torah, Chaim, he says, Sheheralo Ketzad Yisrael Kshurim Udvukim Vashem. He revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu the extent to which Klal Yisrael is connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, in the tefillin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what reveals itself is something similar to what reveals itself in our tefillin. Namely, our tefillin reveal the extent to which we are connected and we desire that dveikus in Hashem. And now flip it around. To what extent is HaKadosh Baruch Hu dveik banu? And I was thinking that maybe this could be an introduction to the Ein Raya. So I know I didn't make enough copies. There may be a copy of page 32 inside here, but I'm not sure if it came out. In any event, if you don't mind sharing it, it may be here in the pages, I don't know. So what we're looking at is page 33, number Ayin Vav. Is it there? Okay. Now, Rabosai, I have to tell you this. I think I understand Ayin Vav. What I'd love to do with you, as we do the next Gemara about Avram Avinu, is Ayin Zayin. Because Ayin Zayin has my name on it, but for Lashon Azariah, but I can't figure it out for heads and tails. You know, sometimes I succeed and sometimes, but I have a feeling if we do it together, we'll clinch this. But the one that I think I could figure out is Ayin Vav. He says the following: that when we talk about the knowledge of God, you know, the divinity as we call it, we have to realize that Yesh Lachalik, that there are two different aspects. He says there's something which is true unto itself, right? And there's something which is relative to us. Meaning this, what do we know about God? We can only know about God what He reveals to us in His relationship to us. But there's another dimension of divinity which is way beyond our comprehension. And he says that kol Torah kula nereches kifi erech seichel hamasig kifi amakabel. He says that all the concepts in the Torah reveal to us only what we could possibly know about God. And that is what he calls the tov ha-musari. This is what we can grasp. However, there's something else called the emet mufshetet, the absolute abstract knowledge of God, the essence of God, which is beyond the hasaga of us, of mortal man. That's already belongs to the upper worlds. Regarding that concept of divinity, which is always separate from us, it is unattainable and unaccessible to man, the pasuk says, "Ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai." HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe Rabbeinu, I know you want everything. You want to go all the way to the 50th Sharbina. You want to know God in and of Himself. What God is in His essence, that you could never do because you're mortal. What you could know is what God reveals to man. That's only a part of the truth, but it's not the ultimate truth. He says the word tefillin in Chazal is a code word for God's essence, for the emet hamufshetet, the ultimate truth about divinity. Because in the tefillin are divrei Elokim chayim, the words of God. Aval ein lehem yachas el ha'adam. But that part of divinity has no connection to man. So then, what could man connect to? He says, man has the kesher shel tefillin. Not the tefillin. The tefillin is beyond human comprehension. But man has a kesher shel tefillin. What does the kesher shel tefillin symbolize? It tells us that there's something of that hasoga hamufshetet, of that abstract knowledge, which is called tefillin, which somehow rolls down, so to speak, it comes down to our seichel in a way that we can understand and comprehend it. Human intellect can grasp that element of divinity, and that is symbolized by the kesher shel tefillin. Not the tefillin themselves, that's beyond human comprehension. But what we have, the gisha that we have, is through the kesher shel tefillin. The kesher shel tefillin represents how much we can link up to Hashem's knowledge. Oh. And now he makes a very, very profound statement. And he says the following. That these two dimensions correspond one to the other. Meaning, although human comprehension is limited, but whatever truth we can know about God is a mirror image that corresponds to the Emet Mufshetet. What Moshe Rabbeinu was granted was the ability to comprehend the Kesher Shel Tefillin, to understand to some extent how our knowledge of God is, although limited, is a mirror image of the ultimate knowledge of God, the perfect and infinite God Himself. Let's read it in Sar. There's one key word here which Rav Kook uses, and he doesn't give us a lexicon. You know, sometimes to crack the nut in Rav Kook, it could be a long paragraph, but there's one word that's the key word, and you don't know what he means, but I think I solved it. He says the following. Yoter yesh la'amik, on a deeper level, to appreciate what God did give Moshe Rabbeinu, did reveal to Moshe. Ki asagot ha-mufshatot, the ultimate knowledge of God unto Himself, with a capital H, which is beyond human comprehension. Vaday yesh erech yadua la'amitatan mitzar atzmam im amitatan biyachas la'makabel. The key word here, I think, is the word erech. And I tried to rack my brains, because usually the word erech means to evaluate. But I think here in Rav Kook, it means something else. The word erech, I think, means a correspondence. In other words, zelu umat ze, in a mirror image sort of situation. And the chiddush here is that our knowledge of God is not alien, it's not completely cut off from the ultimate truth, but rather it corresponds to that truth. What was the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu? What did he achieve? Hodio HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what God gave him, was the yachas and the kishur sheyesh bein elu le'elu. He, Moshe Rabbeinu, got a little bit of a dip, a glimpse of the word erech. How is it that our knowledge, our perception of God, corresponds to the ultimate perception of Hashem? Aval etzem hasagah mufshetet lo nitna lahasoga, even for Moshe Rabbeinu, he cannot penetrate above that world. He can see sort of like a parallelism. He gets a glimpse of how our human comprehension is a segue, so to speak, into the divine ultimate emet hamufshetet darupanai lo yiro. But to actually penetrate into that world of divinity, that even Moshe Rabbeinu, as great as he is not capable of doing this. For the future? You mean that will eventually be revealed?
Yes. And
whoa.
And Ahurai, you know that Moshe Rabbeinu got the... that everything that Hashem does in the world...
Right.
He can understand why Hashem did it.
What motivates Hashem, you mean? To his actions?
What motivates Hashem, we don't
know. We don't know.
We don't know. But you can see the results, and you can maybe tie that's the kesher. You see the kesher between the certain things that happen.
Why? To find an underlying connection.
Like
we used to play that game of dado, you know, to find the lines that connect one dot to the other.
Why was there the Shoah? You could say 15 different things.
Explanations.
But Moshe Rabbeinu knew why.
Uh-huh. Wow. But I just want to point out one thing, Zev. There's one line where he says, "Ha'emet ha'mufshetet eino begeder hasaga."
Because
you're saying only now, but in the future begeder hasaga.
No, never.
So what did you mean when you said in the future?
In the future is how Moshe wanted to know how Kadosh Baruch Hu actually takes his decisions. The emet and hepshet is what makes, it's difficult to say, what makes the Kadosh Baruch Hu teach? What makes
right.
this go this way, or that way, or different way, that is Hashem said. I'm not going to give that to you.
I know Shulo Bar Hasagim. That you can't.
You can't understand the way that I manage the world.
Yeah.
But you can see, you can relate the consequences of what you see. You will be able to see the logic in what I did after the fact.
Oh, beautiful. That's after the fact I want to focus on, because that's what I was going to tell you, and I think you were machave to something I heard from my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik used to say the Ra'isa Sachorai means that man has the capacity to understand God's actions in retrospect.
Yes.
To go forward and predict, like you say, that would require my understanding divine motivation and how he makes his decisions. That's beyond human comprehension. But what we can do is in retrospect. And you mentioned Purim before. Purim is a great example. Because all the events of Purim seem so strange and bizarre in their time. You know, the people are invited to the feast and the banquet. Vashti is taking this, and then the decree of Haman, the Lahara Glashvat, everything seems so. But Igalai Milsam, I'm afraid, in other words, in retrospect, Vera Isa Sachorai, excuse me, man can understand God after the fact, as you said. So that's what I think. I don't know that that's what he's saying, but I'm telling you what I heard from my Rebbe.
Look at the Kesha. What's Kesher? It's this is tied to this,
right.
And this is tied to this, and I can see the, I can see a picture
that comes, that becomes clearer.
Then when Chazal say Yiralu Kesher shel Tefillin, is we see the how things are tied together.
Tied together, the Kesher itself. I'm going to excuse myself for a minute to get a cup of water because I started coughing. The Gemara on top of Zion Omid Beis. Omer Rav Yochanan, Mishum Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Miyom Shebora Kodesh Baruch Hu Es HaOlam Lo Haya Adam Shekaro La Kodesh Baruch Hu Adon Ad Sheba Avram Vekaro Adon. So who is the first to describe God as the master of the universe? That was Avram. Shenemar Vayomer. What does he say? Vayomer Ado. And here he says, Adnus Elokim Bame Eda Ki Erashena. And this is, of course, in the Brisbane of Psalm Pashas Lech Lecha, when Hashem says that your children will inherit the land, Avram Avinu calls Hashem Adon. Correct? With a noy at the end. Now here, we have a serious problem, because there were others who called God by a name, but not by this name. They called Hashem by the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. The Chiddush of Avram is to add Adnus as a name. And what we want to study is what's unique about this name Adnus. Why is it so mind-boggling that Avram Avinu calls Hashem Adon? So let me start with the Rashba. The Rashba says the following. What was the popular belief, the widespread belief in the generation of Avram Avinu? They recognized the fact that God created the world, but God created Kochavim Mazolos, correct? All sorts of constellations, stars. And God removed himself, Chas V'Shalom, from controlling, from his providence over man's life, man's existence. And instead, it's up to the Kochavim Umazolos. And therefore, they came to the conclusion that if a man is rich or poor, it all depends on his mazel. And therefore, they came to the conclusion that man cannot really control his mazolos. It's beyond man's actions. And Avraham Avinu came and said, that's not so. According to my mazel, I cannot have children. And yet, Hashem blessed Avram with a child when Avram Avinu was an old guy. He was 100 years old. And all this is to prove to the world that man is not subject to mazal.
But he needed to change his name.
Correct. But he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Adon, he is the master above all the marachot. He can undermine all these kochot. And that's what Hashem can do. And therefore, Hashem is called Adon. Adon means Lamala, above all these marachot. And the Node of Yehuda expands this. And he says in the Tzlach, that up until Avraham Avinu, the belief was that God gave over the control of the universe to the Marachot HaShamayim, and they didn't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the Adon over the world. Avraham Avinu recognized Hashem's Adnus, and everything is under Hashgachas HaBorei, everything is under divine guidance and providence. Vehu, and God is the Adon Al Kol HaMasim. We must serve Him, and God will treat us according to our merits. Now all this is great, and I'm going to bring down some other mafarshim that go on a similar path. But I do want to share with you one idea that I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, and he said that the concept of adnus is ownership. That's how he learned it. For example, if you have an eved, the eved is a possession of his adon. The greatness of Avraham Avinu is that he declared and publicly taught that Hashem is the owner of the universe. Which means that if everything belongs to Him with a capital H, we can only enjoy the benefits of this world when the owner gives us permission to do so. And Hashem says that I'm going to set down certain conditions. We are Avdei Hashem. He is the Adon. Now what makes God the owner of the universe? So the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Lashem ha'aretz umaloa, meaning that God created the world. The world belongs to God because when you create something, you own something. And that's a halachic legal category. It's called kinyan maisa yadayim. Man owns the product of his labor. And even though that might sound like Marx's philosophy, he was a yid, but just by name only, but it goes way beyond Marx. I mean, back to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu recognized Hashem as the owner, the master of the universe. But here he quotes the Ein Yaakov, and the Ein Yaakov says that it doesn't make any sense to say that when Avraham Avinu calls Hashem the Adon, he's adding something to Hashem. That's unacceptable. But rather, what the Gemara is trying to tell us is that there's a concept called Ein Melech Belo Am, that a Melech needs subjects. And therefore, what Avraham Avinu was able to do is make God, so to speak, into a king. Because nobody was serving Hashem. They were serving the Kochavim and the Mazalos. Correct. So the great revolution of Avram is that Hashem's Adnus, which means His Malchus, became a reality. When Hashem says that it was Avram Avinu was the first to call me Adon, Hashem is saying that the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world became Nikeres. It became recognizable. It became a reality only through and as a result of Avraham Avinu. Kol zman shelo hikiru hayitzurim malchuso, as long as the creatures did not recognize God as the Melech, lo nikra Adon, he's not called Adon. So again, we're not saying that we're giving something on Kodesh Baruch. Kodesh Baruch is perfect. He doesn't need any gifts from man. But nevertheless, there is this concept of Malchus. When does the Malchus of Hashem, which is abstract, become a reality? When the people accept Hashem's Malchus. Who was the individual, was the catalyst, who brought about Hashem's Malchus in reality? Not just as an abstract idea. That was Avraham Avinu. interesting. He says, in the name of the Kanfei Yonah, that why do we begin Shmoneh Esrei with the bracha that ends Magen Avraham? And he says that that first bracha is something that belongs completely to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was the first to call God by the name Adon, right? Noi. And therefore, let's begin Tefillah Shacharis by mentioning Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is the one who is Mesakein Tefillah Shacharis, right? The Gemara tells us in Brachos later on. And it makes sense that the person who determined and established Hashem as the Adon, he should be at the beginning of that tefillah. Because our tefillah begins Baruch Atah and then Adnos. And that was the tefillah Shacharis. And he says that the minhag is, I don't know if you're familiar with this minhag, to recite Adon alone before Shacharis. It's in the Siddurim. I don't have the minhag, but if you have it, why? Because Avraham Avinu established Tefillah Shacharis, he was the one who declared Hashem as the Adon, and therefore we should recite the hymn, the piyut of Adon alone. He quotes the Gaon who heard this pirush of the Kanfei Yonah. The Gaon was very excited about it, and one of his talmidim called the Siach Yitzchak, who's published in the Siddur Agra, he says that the reason why we begin Shmoneh Esrei by mentioning Hashem Sfasai Tiftach, because the first word in that sentence is Ado, right? Is Adnus. We want to mention the Zchus of Avraham Avinu. Before we enter in to see the king, we say, you know what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who are we? We are descendants of Avraham Avinu. That's our Yichus. And he was the one who declared your Adnus. And therefore, Hashem Sfasai Tiftach is B'loshan Adnus. The bracha Rishon of Shmoneh Esrei is Magen Avraham. He was the first to call Hashem Adnus. And that's what we want. Now, Rabosai, this next piece is a killer. I need your help on this. This is Ayin Zayin. I thought maybe Ayin Zayin, that's giving me a... Az, maybe it's a message for me. You know, work and work and work. So I read this paragraph about 5 times, and I'm still confused about it. So let's just give it a shot. We'll spend about 5 minutes on this. And then after this, Emirtz Hashem, again, only if you're interested, I'd like to give a shiur. Usually I discuss the parsha, but in this case, because we're coming close to Tainus Esther, which is on Wednesday, I'd like to discuss the halacha of Tainus Esther. What is it? It's a very unique fast. Okay, so that's only if you're around and if you're interested. He writes the following: Yachas Adon el Eved. What is the relationship between a master and his servant? Is that the Eved should obey the command of his master, fulfill his every will? He should do his every avoda. You know, whatever the Adon needs done, the Eved should make sure that he does it well. He says that the ancient man at the time of Avraham Avinu were not able to understand the following. This is what their problem was. And here Rav Kook is trying to understand the origins of Avodah Zarah. What brought about Avodah Zarah? The Rambam has a whole discussion about this at the beginning of Hilchos Akum. Rav Kook, I think, is taking his own approach. He says what they couldn't understand is the relationship between the Shlemut Ha'anagam Musarit El Habore. We understand that man, within the context of the universe, he's a creature in the universe, he's got to find somewhere in the universe a guide, so to speak, for Hanagam Musarit, to achieve perfection in his own life. But where does God fit into the picture? They were unable to attribute to God any sort of connection, of revelation, that would see that the universe itself, the way God created it and the way God runs it, gives man the guidance that he needs to achieve shlemut, to achieve perfection. Lo iskilu, they couldn't understand it. Why? They said etzem abriyah v'ashlamata. They understood that the the purpose of creation was Hanaga Elokit, that we should understand the way God leads the world, but yet they couldn't connect it back to the Ribono Shel Olam. He says the following: Kevan Sha'adam Chafshi, man is free, Birtsono. In Kena Dovra Machriya Tolam Shich Li Mashech, excuse me, El Ashleimutu Ratzona Bore. They couldn't understand that it was the will of God that man gravitate to fulfill his will. And they had to find some sort of conduit, so to speak, that would lead them, that would guide them, that would connect them to Ashlama Musarit. And therefore they started worshipping Avodah Zorah. He says, Ovdei Avodah Zorah shelo eskilu zeh. They couldn't see the divine element built into the Bria that would guide them for Shlemut Musarit. Therefore, Biral Tom Shal Al Kain or Al Karchach, Tzarech Lios B'Mitzius Yachas Machriach Musari. There's got to be something in reality that will lead us and compel us towards this Hashlama Musarit. Is Tzomchu Etzlam, what developed in their philosophy, was Minei Avodah Zorah Shonim, different forms of idol worship. Lahamtzi ruchniim chelkiim, to come up with some sort of a halfway measure in spirituality. Sheishlam yachas l'inyanim musariim shebnuyim al pi mikrim rabim mitchalfim. Again, the language of Rav Kook is very obscure, very heavy, and I just looked at my clock and I realized that it's kind of late. So what I would ask you to do, if you can, again, this I don't give out homework assignments, but if you could photocopy this page, or I'll show you where it sits in the library here, and when you get a chance, go over it again and again, and the language is very challenging. Okay then? So thank you very much. I appreciate that you really added so much to my knowledge. And B'li Neder, we're going to take a look at something for this period of time. Okay, so we'll start B'li Neder in 5 minutes.